another Tuesday night on Long Island. It's Mardi Gras night.
Mardi Gras night?
It's Mardi Gras night.
Come on.
This is the New York Sports Exchange, though. It might be Fat Tuesday right here in my seat, but outside of that, it's the New York Sports Exchange night. He's Derek Wasiak. I'm Eric Merlis. For the next hour, as always, we'll be talking sports. We're going to have some fun tonight. Lots going on this time of year. It's really a lot of fun. March Madness really kicks in this week. We're going to be joined at 9:30 tonight by our guest for the show, broadcaster for ESPN and CBS Sports, Len Elmore, who's getting ready to call the NCAA tournament next week. He will be joining us at 9:30. He's also joining us for a more important reason than basketball. He's involved now in a prostate cancer awareness movement, and we're going to talk to him a little bit about that. That's the important stuff. The basketball is secondary when it comes to him tonight. But he'll be with us at 9:30. And there's hockey, there's baseball, you know, football, who knows what's going on. But, you know, let's start off.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. I want to start off with hockey, and obviously this is, you know, this is Derek's bread and butter is hockey, as we all know. And before we went on the air, we started to touch on it, and I said, hold off on the topic of conversation because I wanted to save it for now because I think we both have some very interesting things to say about it. In the scheme of things, this whole Trevor Gillies 10-game suspension is really inconsequential. The fact that the Islanders chose, rather than to send anyone from the organization to his in-person meeting in Toronto, they had their team picture instead, tells you all that you really need to know as far as the Islanders are concerned about this whole situation. However, my concern is that as a hockey guy, and I think you'll agree with me on this,
right.
This was not a 10-game suspension. Now, I know a lot of the experts, and you would see it on ESPN, and this is what commentators and analysts on the networks are paid to say.
Right.
That everyone was yelling and screaming that it was a hit from behind, it was a dangerous hit, and so on and so on. If you watch the tape, and I know you watch the tape closely, and I know you know how to break these things down.
Right.
Not only was this not a hit from behind, but you can make the argument that any contact towards the head was simply incidental. All right? If you watch the tape, and here's my argument.
I watched it a number of times.
If it's a hit from behind, and this is how I'm going to ask this question. If it's a hit from behind, and you agree with me, if it's a hit from behind, how is it possible that you are able to see the other player's number from beginning to end, and never lose sight of.
Ta-da! No kidding. Let me just start this conversation by saying, just leading into it, that Trevor Gillies, in my opinion, as a hockey player, does not belong at the NHL.
He's not an NHL player.
Does not. I've said it before that the NHL, if they really want to start addressing headshots and all that, they got to start banding together as organizations, heads of each team in terms of personnel, and they need to eliminate guys that solely can only fight or rile things up from the game, because all they talk about is bigger and stronger in terms of headshots and addressing that problem with concussions. And they're stating the answer that the players are bigger and stronger now, so why do you need the tough guy only role? You don't need it. It's useless. And in today's day and age of sports, it doesn't help promote the sport.
Just a quick aside. We're going to get right. It's a quick aside.
Right.
Zenon Konopka scored a goal for the Islanders tonight,
which is great. Yeah, but he's not the greatest hockey player ever.
No, but he's a different kind of heavyweight because he brings a little bit more. He is one of the best face-off guys in the league.
He's a decent forechecker, too.
He does bring something else. He's not Trevor Gillies.
But this problem I have is not with Gillies. I could care less if he's in the league. But if you wanted to handle it right, when they had the big brawl fest with Pittsburgh, if you gave him 15 games then, I would have had no problem with it because of what I watched and all the circumstances and the results, injuries that were involved. But this was subjective and an arbitrary decision to just hand out a suspension. Because, first of all, the hit by Clutterbuck was worse.
It was a million times worse.
That was from behind, if anything. And I'm telling you flat out right now, on that play, I would have given each guy 2 minutes for boarding. I probably wouldn't have even given Clutterbuck a penalty for hitting from behind, because the problem is their rule book is not, there's no leeway for the ref. They're, in their rule book, a hit from behind is major in the game, automatic. So I wouldn't have done that. I would have given him boarding, and I would have given the same to Gillies. So the league turns around and gives him a hit from behind. Well, the ref gave him a hit from behind, which I can't believe that they didn't talk about it, or that somebody didn't help him out with that. And then the league gives him 10 games. Let me tell you something. If I was Gillies, I would hire a lawyer, and I would go after my $61,000 that I had a forfeit in salary. Because that was ridiculous. The whole, I can't believe, and unless you heard someone else, we'll give them credit. But I didn't hear one guy dispute how the referee saw this, what he called, and how Colin Campbell handled it. And I will always say that Colin Campbell is part of the problem. I do not think that he's the right guy for that position. I do not think that he has a good look at things from a law perspective in terms of rule book, playing the game, situation happens, this is how we have to handle it, suspension, fines, whatever. He is a former player, a former coach. He is so...
To what you said, everybody ran from this one.
Because of who it was.
It's the third shift back from his 9-game suspension, and right. He's going up.
Well, I understand that. It's his third shift back.
And people wanted to use that, and people wanted to say, all right, we're cracking down. Look at what we're doing here. This wasn't the right one to do it with, though.
It's not our fault that he's in the league. Listen, the bottom line is, he saw his guy get hit from behind slightly into the boards. He reacted, I'm sticking up for my guy, and he went over and boarded the guy. And the only head contact that could have been is if he mushed him in the face, because there was no elbow to the head or anything.
If you watch the play unfold,
right.
Okay, as you see Clutterbuck come in to hit the Islander, I think it was DiBenedetto.
I don't even care who it was. Okay. I saw it, though.
If you're watching the play unfold, Clutterbuck comes from behind. As Clutterbuck is making contact with the Islander,
right?
Gillies, if you want to draw straight lines, Gillies is in front of Clutterbuck. He's not behind. He's not even on the side. Clutterbuck
he's like 10 feet out from the board, sliding over towards where the puck was.
Clutterbuck was right about at the blue line,
yeah.
And heading towards the offensive zone. Gillies was in the offensive zone. Gillies was actually going forward to get to the guy.
Listen, I showed a couple of other officials. I was on the road refereeing. They all said the same thing. That was ludicrous what went on and how it was handled. It was a joke.
It's just...
But no one will stand in the way of that because it's him. Because he arguably don't belong in the league, so they'll say, okay, fine.
And the indictment about that, again, is that the Islanders... They didn't even send their people up, Gar Snow or whoever might know.
I understand that,
they jumped off of this thing so fast, they sold their guy out.
Well, they shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, but they did.
But even aside from that, this guy, if there's no way for him
there's
to get
no
his $61,000 back, there's something wrong.
There's no reason for him to ever be in the NHL again.
Well, that, the Islanders can make sure that happens. And other teams can make sure that other players of his abilities, which is very little at the NHL level, other teams can assure that players like that don't make it. If they get rid of the Eric Goddards and they get rid of the Derek Bogarts, there's a number of guys. You can go down each roster stats-wise and find the guys that have, 19 points in 500 games played.
You're going to get rid of them.
You don't need them.
You're going to do that, and you're going to look at... And
they're useful at the AHL level to protect some of those guys. You're going to look at that,
and you're going to see a guy like Konopka, right. Who actually does serve a purpose, even though the numbers don't show up on the stat sheet.
Right.
Because nobody looks at these numbers, and they're not so readily available...
Right.
You go look at his face-off percentage. When the Islanders need a big draw, when they need to win a big face-off, he's the guy taking it.
I wouldn't put him in a category with Brandon Prust, but he might become that kind of player, like a Brandon Prust.
And he's a guy that everybody wants in their locker room.
He's a good team player. I don't watch enough Islander games to really comment on that, but he could become like a Brandon Prust type with the Rangers.
But I just think it's highly amusing
that everyone ignored this because it was a garbage player involved.
Right.
Because if this was a guy who could play the game,
he would have gotten one or two the first time.
Bertuzzi got suspended for a year and benefited because there was a lockout and nobody played hockey, and then he was allowed back in the league
for a year.
And that guy got paralyzed.
And Bertuzzi.
So, I don't know what to tell you.
And Bertuzzi's 100 times better player than Trevor Gillies.
So that's why he was allowed back in the league.
Right.
And if he was the same caliber of a Trevor Gillies, he would have never been allowed back in this league. So how about this? How about preventing those guys from making it to this level then? Okay. Now, more importantly, let's move to the Rangers, because Rangers shut out the Flyers.
I was about to tell a Bertuzzi story.
Nothing. No, I don't hear about Bertuzzi. My father's probably listening. He'll flip out. He still can't believe they let him back.
He's one of the dumbest athletes I've ever crossed paths with.
I wouldn't question that at all.
Stepped off the bus one day. See, I'm forcing the story. You know?
That's okay. Go ahead. No,
it's funny.
Now I want to hear it.
I was not on this trip, but I got word back as soon as it happened. It was a road trip to Detroit.
Okay.
And they step off the bus in Detroit to go to the hotel.
All right.
And he steps off and he goes, ah, Detroit, the Windy City.
Oh, my God. That's great.
There was another time.
That's great. The Windy City.
There was a time I was on a trip. We were going to Florida. And we were in mid-flight, and this was back. This had to be
what a jackass.
This had to be October of 1995.
Well, he's from Canada, so we get a little slight on that.
Detroit is on the Canadian border.
I know.
You know.
I'm trying to help.
And he's from he's an Ontario kid, so yeah. He should know that. So we're on the flight going to Miami. I'm going to say October of 1995. He was just in the league for about a month.
Okay,
this is rookie year, and you know, this was obviously well before 9/11. The rules about what you could and couldn't do on a plane were a lot more lax back
right,
then.
And
it was a charter flight on top of that. It was just us. It was just the team. So he wanted to go watch part of the flight from up in the cockpit. So the pilots were like, okay, fine. You know, come on, hang out up here with us for a little bit. It's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. You know, we were all sitting around having lunch. And, you know, there were card games going on. So it was not a big deal.
Okay.
So, midway through the fight, he's up there, we're all hanging out, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, all of the oxygen masks come flying down.
Okay, what'd he do?
And we're all sitting there in a panic for a second because, you know, uh-oh, here come the oxygen masks. And he just goes sprinting back to his seat.
So this was his idea of a gag joke?
Well, he just goes sprinting back to his seat.
Uh-huh.
So we're all like, what's going on? The pilot gets on the loudspeaker and he goes, don't worry, folks. You know, the flight attendants are going to come around and help you put the stuff back up. There's nothing wrong. Don't worry about it. Oh, and by the way, Todd, don't worry about it. You had nothing to do with this.
Which means he had everything to do with this.
I think that might have been the last time he was allowed to ride in the cockpit. So those are my two Todd Bertuzzi stories. I told you they would be worth it. Now let's talk about the Rangers' big 7-0 win this past weekend.
It's a statement game.
Well,
it was good for them that they got the win because they had dropped their previous three at home, which was a bad thing to do, which they've been doing all season. And I keep saying over and over, and I hate sounding like a broken record, but it's the only bad thing about this team this year is their performance on home ice. But they come out against the Flyers, they get a 7-0 win. Callahan has 4 goals in the game. The Rangers look good, very physical type game. Start to finish, 60 minutes worth of hockey. Listen, it's going to be their own fault if they don't make the playoffs. Now they go out west, they'll play against Anaheim, they'll play against San Jose before they come home again. Next week they'll play the Islanders. On Tuesday, they're on our show, actually. The Rangers,
we're going to miss it?
The Rangers have to parlay that home win into several home wins, and that will get them into the playoffs. They just have to win games at home. I mean, they're 15-16 now at home. It's not going to work that way. Buffalo's turning it on. Carolina's right there. Montreal. But let me tell you something, Eric. These teams, if you look at the roster of these teams, there's no excuse if the Rangers miss the playoffs. There's nothing that has you look at Montreal and say, wow, what a team. Outside of Carey Price, listen, they're two best players, Scott Gomez and Mike Camilleri. Please stop. I mean, any of these teams. The teams that are, you know, stocked with offense are obviously your Washingtons, which is playing better, your Philadelphia, your Tampa Bay. And the more amazing team that keeps themselves up there, despite not having their two superstars, is Pittsburgh. They're one team. You know how they do it? Because their coach is excellent. The guy's professional, pays attention to detail, and he's a motivated coach. And I remember watching that HBO special before the outdoor game, and he has meetings with his players every so often. They go through progress reports, tells them the guy is pretty thorough. Everything he does, he's got a decent personality, and when he delivers a message, he's not like repetitive. He's not cursing. He just has a real precise way of delivering a message to his team. His team acts as professionally as he does, and they're together. They're a pretty tight-knit group. So
I said it last week. You put me on the spot, and I'm going to say it again. I just have that feeling. I just don't see the Rangers. I think they're going to end up the odd team out.
Well, they might. The Devils are still hot.
This trip is going to... This is the make-or-break trip simply because They
I don't think it's the trip that's make or break. It's the way they play
well,
home.
Well, here's
the,
you know but, I mean? But that's what you've got to get these points on this trip.
But they'll probably go and split at least.
They've been playing so poorly at home, it makes the road games that much more important.
But they have 20 road wins, which there's not too many teams that have 20 road wins. Yeah, so
but now you've got the fan, West Coast trip.
As a fan or as an objective observer, you really don't feel their performance on the road.
If this trip were to Chicago, St. Louis, and and Toronto, or something, of that geographical nature.
No, I got you.
It's one thing. Those West Coast trips, we all know what can happen on.
You know
West
what?
Coast
I went out there a couple of years to visit a friend of ours from high school, Chris Cinto, and I took him to hockey games, which he had never been to probably since high school, and maybe when he was in college at Cornell, he went to see the college team play. But I took him when we went to see the Rangers play Anaheim and the Kings, and they won both games. So, and then I don't recall what they did. Because we only went to those two games. They went up to San Jose after. But this is only a two-game West Coast trip. But I've seen them do it on the road.
That's a weird... That's
but when
weird.
They come home, they got some big games that they got to win.
A two-game West Coast trip is a weird scheduling thing.
You know what it is? Because they have more games played.
Right.
So now the Big East tournament's here. They got to be out of the Garden all week. So they'll play two games on the road. They'll have plenty of rest time. Hank will play both games in net.
My point
other teams will make up at least a game or so. Because teams like Buffalo has three games in hand. These teams have to make up games. Yeah. So the Rangers can afford to be...
No. My point more is just knowing how the schedules are done by the leagues, that they would schedule a two-game trip out west as opposed to making a four-game trip. Not because the Rangers have played more games than anybody. At the beginning of the year when they put the schedule together, it's just weird that they did two games on the West Coast.
I've seen a lot of weird things. Remember when I brought to your attention the thing with Tampa Bay, they had a 12-game homestand. When does a team spend an entire month at home? And they actually did good. They were 7-3-2 on that homestand.
You better be 7-3-2 on a homestand.
And yet, because they've stumbled the last four games or so, Washington's back in first place. And Washington, I mean, you think like me, Washington has struggled to score goals all season. I don't know how they do it. Now they're back in first place. And Ovechkin's starting to put up points. And Kovalchuk, you know, as bad as he was early for the Devils, they're on a hot streak, and now he's averaging over a point per game during their hot streak, and he's earning some of that money that he signed, you know, what was it, $15 million a year, whatever, that $100 million contract.
Took him long enough.
Well, the Devils, they ain't slowing down yet. They were losing 1-0 before I got here, so we'll see how they do rest of the way.
Let's take a quick break. We'll talk some college basketball when we come back, leading into our talk with Len Elmore.
Right.
We'll talk a little baseball later on in the show.
Got a spring training, baby.
Yep.
And we got to talk NFL because Tiki Barber wants to come back.
Give me a
break. Oh.
All right. Quick break.
Pretty funny.
We'll be back right after this. If you're thinking of buying a house this spring or are thinking of refinancing, you owe it to yourself to find out how much you qualify for before you start looking. A licensed loan officer from Academy Mortgage Corp will meet with you for a free consultation and pre-approval either at your home, your lawyer's office, or their office in Farmingdale. Academy Mortgage is a direct mortgage lender based right here in the heart of Long Island. They are approved FHA and conventional mortgage lenders and combine great rates with great knowledge and service. Why not give them a call? 516-249-4800. And I should say that they just helped me finish closing on my refinance. They did a great job. And rates were going up. And
so you're not getting evicted. Excellent.
No, I'm not. And somehow rates were going up, and my man Vinny over at Academy got me a...
No foreclosure in Merlis
Land. He got me a number I was real happy with. I have to tell you that. So now I'm speaking from experience. They did my mortgage when I bought my house. They did my mortgage now when I refinanced. This is the place to go, folks. Academy Mortgage. Again, 516-249-4800. Creedence Clearwater Revival, the music that you're listening to.
Easy listening.
Proud Mary. Personally, and I was talking to Tom Ross about this before the show, personally, I actually would have rather have heard the Tina Turner version of it. I think it's a much better song.
More up-tempo.
It's much better.
Tom, is this your kind of music?
Tom
likes Tina Turner too.
Yeah, well, you know,
I'm not a big Tina Turner fan.
I didn't have that version.
You know, like other Islanders, they won a Stanley Cup and they had that Queen song, "We Are the Champions." Like that was their song.
Right.
And the Rangers win a cup and they use that simply to. I hate that song.
Well, there is a theme to the music for tonight. There is a theme to the music tonight.
What is it?
Mardi Gras. These are songs about New Orleans.
What is this Mardi Gras stuff you bring up now?
Today is Mardi Gras.
Today is the 40th anniversary.
But today,
of the Ali Frazier trilogy, the beginning of it. That's what it is.
On the same day.
You went to Mardi Gras.
Well, it's Mardi Gras. Have you ever been to Mardi Gras?
No, I have not.
I haven't either.
But I think my parents have. They said it was a lot of fun.
It's a blast. I've never made it, but it's debauchery. And I know how you are about debauchery. So.
Okay. You're throwing fancy vocabulary words out there, by the way.
You know, you're not studying
it insane or, you know.
You're not studying studying for the SATs anymore?
No. Okay. No, not at all.
You know, you mentioned the Ali Frazier fight at Madison Square Garden 40 years ago today. 40 years to the day of the start of this year's big battle at Madison Square Garden.
Really?
The Big East tournament starts today.
I saw the brackets. I didn't study these things.
Okay.
I saw the brackets.
Okay.
And I'm gonna stick with what I said last week. Because if St. John's wins their first game tomorrow.
Right. And they play Rutgers now. Rutgers beat Seton Hall today.
Right.
So St. John's gets Rutgers tomorrow.
So if they win tomorrow, they'll play Syracuse. And I said.
That's a winnable
game. When we were just talking about the season and everything, that if they got to the semifinals of the Big East tournament, I would be satisfied with their progress this year. And I think that beating Syracuse to go to the Final Four for the Big East tournament, I think that'd be an accomplishment. Because that is a program that is there every year with Boeheim. And I would view that as a big win.
To be very honest, even if they lose to Syracuse,
right.
You still have to be thrilled with the success of this.
Oh, I would be happy with it. But I think if they can get to that final, if they can beat Syracuse, go to the Final Four, I think that'd be insanity.
Nobody expected.
And that would jack it up at the Garden for the Final Four.
They were projected to be somewhere in the middle of the pack of the Big East.
Right.
You know, they finished tied for third. They tied with Syracuse. You know, in the standings, they lost the tiebreaker. They ended up the fifth seed. Louisville was also Louisville's the three. It was a three-way tie.
Well, they tied with somebody.
Yeah, it was a three-way tie, 3-4
and 5.
They
played tomorrow. That other team got the
right. Exactly.
Now you follow it more.
I was at the game on Saturday. I was working for ESPN
South Florida
against South Florida.
They blew them out, right?
It was a little bit closer than
because Lavin got kicked out the game before. So
right, that was the game
ESPN.
They lost.
That was good.
That was the game they lost. That was really the wake-up call. They needed
a Billy Moore. You know, like Billy Moore would tell you, throw me out of here.
They needed.
I thought that was good move by him.
They needed to lose a game against a team they should have beaten.
Right.
They really needed that.
Because they were playing real well.
They were playing real well. They needed that little dose of reality, a little reminder that, you know, they have to work a little bit harder. Talent-wise, they're not on the same level as a Syracuse or as a Louisville or as a Pitt. Teams that they've beaten throughout the course of the season. Duke is another one. Georgetown is another one. They've beaten all these teams. Now, what makes a team successful this time of year?
Right.
It's two things. It's guard play, and you hear this every year. I'm not making this up. This isn't Merlis's philosophy. And Len Elmore is going to probably say the same thing without us even prodding.
Okay.
Two things that make a team successful this time of year. Guard play, seniors.
Right.
Now, there are 10 seniors on St. John's.
Which is good.
Four starters.
Their recruiting is good also coming
they
up
have
behind
the,
them.
They have the number two recruiting class in the nation for next year.
There you go then. You answered my question.
All right. Both of their starting guards are seniors. It is a very, very deep, very senior-oriented team. This is the kind of team that can make a big run.
Right.
And the fact that all of these guys are going to see the NCAA tournament for the first time.
Right,
as seniors, it's their first trip since 2002.
I mean, that's a long time.
As seniors, they've been there their whole careers and haven't seen the NCAA tournament. And there are some transfers in there, you know, but still, they're all seniors. That is going to be a big, big rallying point for this team.
It's going to be exciting.
Do not be surprised if this team goes to Sweet 16, Elite Eight.
Right.
I'm not putting them in the Final Four.
No, you never know, but somebody
you never
always,
know.
You know,
guys, you never know.
Team surprise.
It depends on the matchups. This is a team that could go a long way in this tournament starting next week, simply because of the makeup of the team. Steve Lavin has been there before. He knows what it takes to coach in the big tournament.
He coached at UCLA.
He was at UCLA for a long time.
Where else was he before that?
I don't remember where he was before. He was, I think, at Purdue before. If I remember right, that's why Gene Cady.
I was going to ask you about
that's
him.
Why
he's
Gene
one of his
Cady
assistants,
is,
right?
That's why Gene Cady is on the bench now. I believe it's because he hired Steve Lavin for his first job.
Right.
So, Lavin returning the favor and bringing Gene Cady in.
Well, so let me ask you a question now. You talked about the talent level. Some of these other teams, Syracuse, more talent. Steve Lavin. You follow the Big East better than me. Is he the Big East coach of the year easily?
I don't think there's any question.
No question about it.
I don't think there's any question. He has to be.
The other question is, you talked about the strength of a recruiting class, second in the nation. Is that more attributable to attributed to him and his staff, or is that the prior staff?
No, that's him. That's him.
That's got to speak volumes.
Yes.
In terms of bringing in, you know, the future of this college program.
They now have a pipeline into L.A.
Okay.
You know, everyone talks about St. John's needs to keep the New York City kids home to be successful.
Local flavor, yep.
But having Lavin and all of his L.A. connections... There's a freshman on St. John's now who's starting, a kid by the name of Poli, who's is the only non-senior starter. He's a freshman.
Okay.
Is an L.A. kid. His father is an L.A. high school basketball legend. He was one of the top recruits in L.A. He's already here. And then next year they're bringing in at least one more elite recruit from L.A., and they were able to keep a couple of kids from New York home that are at the top of the class as well. This team all of a sudden is going to turn around real fast. You're going to see it this year. This is not the team, though, that is going to put St. John's back in the elite. It'll be the group that comes in starting next year.
Recruiting class is
exactly. These guys work their tails off.
Right.
And it was a very
short period of time. He took what he had when he got here and he turned him into a winning program. Boom.
It was senior day on Saturday. And I actually, you know, I mentioned this last week. I had never seen a basketball game at Carnes Seco Arena.
Which is nice that you were there because you've been to the Garden thousands of times. So now
I've seen them at the Garden. I've seen them at the Garden tons of times. I never saw him on campus.
Right.
Like I said, it was senior day. It was very emotional. There were a couple of kids that were literally, they were crying during the pregame ceremonies. They were physically, they couldn't control the tears.
Right. Well, for some reason, they're not going to play anymore after this.
But that's what this program and this season has meant to some of these kids.
Yeah, it was a huge turnaround. These guys are having tremendous success. Like you said, they haven't been to any tournament since 2002. And now, all of a sudden,
If I'm another team, if I'm the team that has to play St. John's in the second round or the third round,
right,
where I might be the better seed, but I have to face that team, I'm a little worried. I'm not overly confident if I'm that team, simply because there's something special. There's something very special going on with the St. John's team. And that makes for a dangerous matchup for the Dukes of the world, for the Pitts of the world, for all the Ohio States of the world. And, you know, we're mentioning all these elite teams now, and it's the perfect time to bring in our guest for this evening.
Who's from New York.
He's a New York guy. You know, I'm sure watching St. John's become relevant again is... I know it makes the game better for all New Yorkers to watch. From ESPN and CBS Sports, Len Elmore. Len, Eric Merlis and Derek Wasiak, thanks for joining us tonight. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. How are you?
We're doing great. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Before we get into the basketball, the real reason we're having you on, and it's for something considerably more important than basketball, and it's that you have now become involved in a new program called On the Line, which helps promote the awareness for prostate cancer. Can you give us a little background on that and why you've decided to become involved in this?
Sure. Well, On the Line is a new campaign and it challenges guys to get off the sideline and take charge of their health, because their health is on the line. And what we're trying to do is offer men, their families, and their friends information about prostate cancer, health information, how to get help, how to get examinations. And we're trying to do it through a sports-themed platform, which right now, during March Madness, is a perfect time. Now, the creator of On the Line is this health, a healthcare marketing company, which is dedicated to communicating easy-to-understand health information to consumers. And they're working with the American Society of Clinical Oncology. You know, the reason I got involved is, you know, I wanted to help motivate guys to take a proactive role in managing their health. I mean, I'm of that age right now that, you know, we need to continue to kind of monitor our health, you know, recognize what the tests are, the relevant tests are for prostate cancer, which will strike 1 in 6 men. And that is significant. You think about it, you look around, 6 guys, one of you is going to get prostate cancer, a diagnosis of that. And particularly among African-American males who are at a higher risk. You know, it's time to get out there and forget about, you know, worried about discussing these things and get checked. And it's also a good opportunity for the women in their lives, be it wives, sisters, whomever, to be able to have some influence on getting guys to get out there and get themselves checked. Because early detection, certainly will help increase the survival rate. And I got involved because, you know, I've had loved ones, family members pass away from the insidious disease of cancer, and prostate cancer is one of those that, as I mentioned, with early detection, you know, can increase survival rates. And so, you know, rather than sit on the sidelines, you know, I wanted to be able to utilize the visibility that I have during March Madness to be able to get this message out.
Now, some of the other people that are involved in this initiative, along with yourself, you know, names like Bobby Knight and John Thompson, Digger Phelps, Billy Packer, Aaron Andrews, and obviously being at ESPN, there's always that heightened awareness there simply because of the whole V Foundation and the ties to Jim Valvano. It was that when ESPN got involved, obviously, I'm assuming that was one of the calling cards to that really helped people rally around this in Bristol, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, ESPN obviously is extraordinarily community-minded, and the Jimmy V Foundation certainly is, you know, their flagship in getting involved in and trying to, you know, be a positive and beneficial communicator of, you know, what we can do to stop this disease. And as you mentioned, guys like Derek Phelps, who is a survivor, Aaron Andrews' father is a survivor, so the experience runs deep. And, you know, we're a close-knit group, and all of us certainly want to be able to get that message out. And as I say, if guys can go to their doctors, let their doctors you know, diagnose and recommend the type of test that you certainly need to be able to do it, you know, that's the first step. And as I said, being of that age, it's certainly increased my awareness of it. And actually being African-American, I recognize that I'm at a higher risk. So, you know, I'm going to do it, and I urge everybody out there, every male out there, to do it. If you need more information, www.ontheline.com will serve to be able to provide that information.
That was going to be the next question. I wanted to make sure everybody got the information on where they can go, and you mentioned the website, ontheline.com. You know, obviously, we're all going to urge everybody to go and check this out. You know, Derek and I we're starting to approach that age where it's going to start to become a little more of a concern as well. So, you know, we certainly are going to start, you know, mentioning it to our friends and making sure everybody is aware of this initiative out there.
Well, I appreciate that very much. It's very important, and obviously, check, you know, family history. If there is a history of this type of cancer in the family, I mean, you don't have to wait until you're 45, 50. You should get checked earlier.
Now, Len, before we get to the basketball with the March Madness coming, I want to just address some of your personal accomplishments in life. You were born in New York. You went to the University of Maryland. You were three-time All-ACC and All-American in 74. And then you had a 10-year professional career. However, I was a police officer for 17 years before I got hurt, and I saw that you went to Harvard and received a law degree in 1987 and chose to be a prosecutor coming out of there and went to work in Brooklyn. So tell me about your experience as an ADA, and was it everything you thought it was going to be, and or was it a real eye-opener for you?
Well, it certainly was an eye-opener. You know, I was born in Brooklyn, and I thought that was a perfect opportunity to try to give something back. You know, I've been blessed with the opportunity to play basketball and live a good life, but I also recognize that, you know, unlike guys today, back then when we got paid, which was not insignificant, but we certainly weren't going to be able to spend the rest of our lives on Easy Street.
Right.
And I also wanted to be an attorney ever since I was in the seventh grade. I guess basketball got in the way, you know.
Okay.
But ultimately, I did be able to fulfill my dream. You know, there was a great eye-opener in recognizing, again, that, you know, it was all about protecting the community, trying to do the good out there. Not only were we trying to be able to, you know, fight crime and put people away who were detrimental to the community, but also be able to send messages in a positive sense that, you know, the law enforcement was not the enemy. Law enforcement actually was certainly an ally in those communities. And I think it was very important, and great working relationships with Men in Blue. And, you know, we, during those days, it was very interesting. So a lot of interesting stories. And the most important thing for me is that having had 10 years of real life experience behind me, you know, I wasn't wet behind the ears. I mean, I understood some of the issues and some of the problems with people and, you know, tried to find solutions as opposed to just incarcerate, because that's not the only answer. But obviously when it came down to it, there are people who didn't deserve to be in the community, and certainly you wanted to be able to isolate them to protect the community. So it was interesting. It was almost 4 years of an experience that, you know, I really enjoyed. And, you know, obviously if I were younger and were probably, you know, more affluent, I probably would continue to do that. But, you know, I had to raise a family as well. So
right.
4 years were enough.
I got you. No, that's great, though. I'll tell you, because I can empathize from a salary perspective, because when I was a young cop, police officers didn't make a lot either, so it had to be a passion, which it was there for me as a cop. It had to be a passion for you to choose to be a prosecutor, because I dealt with a lot of ADAs after arresting, and for the work they had to do, wasn't a ton of money, not at all.
Yeah, no, but it was good teamwork, and,
uh-huh.
You know, for those who had the right frame of mind, you know, which certainly tried to accomplish the things that we wanted to make it a safer place for our families and our friends.
Well, we've talked about the important stuff. You know, all this is that we got the important stuff. Now let's talk a little bit about the fun stuff. And, you know, next we all won't know what next week is. Have they told you where you're headed yet, or do they wait until the bracket comes out to tell you which location you're going to?
Well, I mean, next week I know that Gus and I will be in Dayton. We'll follow Clark Kellogg and Jim Nance and Steve Kerr.
Okay.
On Wednesday, they'll do the first two games, and then Wednesday we'll follow up there. And then after that, you're right, they'll wait till the brackets come out and try to assign us someplace, hopefully close
right.
to Dayton, because, you know, doing four games in one day, I need some lead time to prepare.
Right, yeah, definitely.
And obviously, being in New York, you've got a first-hand up-close view of what's going on at St. John's, and, you know, when I led into your introduction, we were talking about them, and, you know, having them relevant again certainly makes college basketball a whole lot more fun in this area. What are your thoughts on the St. John's team and what they might be able to accomplish in the tournament once it gets going next week?
Well, first of all, I got to give credit to my studio partner, Steve Lavin. I mean, Lav and I talked basketball for a long time while he was an ESPN analyst. And you recognize that, you know, from the time he left UCLA until the time he took over the St. John's job, being in television really gave him a perspective that certainly would help him in managing young people and being able to motivate them, and certainly being able to navigate the game. And he's done a terrific job here in New York. I mean, there are some good teams in the metropolitan area. I mean, look at a team like LIU that's won a ton of games, and there are others, but St. John's is a flagship, and, you know, they play in the toughest conference in America, the Big East, right now. And what they've been able to do against ranked teams has really brought excitement to the Garden. I mean, the Garden's been rocking, and I've had an opportunity to do one of those games where they beat a ranked team. You're right. It certainly brings relevance back to New York. Maybe we can keep some of the, you know, prime New York players at home right now because of the way that St. John's is rolling. What they can do going forward, you know, they're a dangerous team. They rely on athleticism, on quickness, utilizing pressure. You know, they have some breakdown artists. Dwight Hardy is one of the best one-on-one players, I think, in America. And what Steve has done has been able to put them in a position to succeed. He's been able to play to their strengths, you know, give guys an opportunity to do what they do best. And, you know, granted, they're seniors and there's a sense of senior urgency. They've got experience, but, you know, the difference between last year and this year is this team seems to be more focused, more relaxed, more intense. And that's not to take anything away from Norm Roberts, because Norm did the best job that he could. But I think Steve is in the perfect position, the confluence of the perfect storm. You got seniors, he's got great ideas, they've got senior urgency, and they started to win and build some momentum. They're going to be tough out.
Yeah, and you mentioned the fact that, you know, there are other teams in this area that are successful. You know, St. Peter's now is in the tournament. You mentioned Long Island.
I did that game last night. It was a terrific display. Take nothing away from my own. Tim Clues has done a great job with that program. But for one game, I mean, you look at St. Peter's, a strong defensive team. They were able to play their game, impose their will, play at their tempo. John Dunn did a great job. Down the stretch, it seemed like St. Peter's was about to just fold. And he kept his composure as a coach, and that really was transmitted to his team. They kept their composure, had the mental toughness to kind of gut it out, and they came away with the win.
Right. And you mentioned Long Island University. They have a shot. They're in the finals of their conference championship. Stony Brook is in the conference finals of their championship. It's been a long time since
since the New York metropolitan area has had, forget about one team, has had a handful of teams that could be representing the area in the tournament. It really does make it a lot more fun to watch when there's that rooting interest.
Oh, it's absolutely true. I mean, you know, again, you know, we look at New York City. I know when I played, we thought it was the cradle of basketball. And, you know, I played at Powell Memorial Academy, which, you know, had a great reputation because of Lou Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Right.
You know, we won a national championship in high school. You got great high school teams like Malloy and others back in those days. And, you know, great players came out of that. It was hard to keep them at home. And I think now with the success of these home teams right now, guys will think twice about leaving the area. You know, certainly they want to play for quality programs and get on television, but in the end, the success with these schools is going to give them more visibility, and that certainly is a great recruiting tool.
Well, Len, I appreciate you taking the time to join us. Again, I want to make sure we give the website address for On the Line one more time. It's www.ontheline.com.
That's correct. And guys, I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to spread the message and, you know, also kind of laud my man Lav and New York City basketball.
Yeah.
You bet. Great of you, Len.
We appreciate the time. Thank you very much, Len.
All right. Take care now.
All right. Take care. That was Len Elmore, ESPN and CBS Sports. And you know, listen, it's a fun time of year for college basketball, but the stuff that we talked about with Len about On the Line is more important than college basketball any day of the week. So as we've done when we've had Pat LaFontaine on, and as we've done when we had Ed Hearn on, we encourage everybody to go and educate themselves just a little bit on the topic. And in this case, it's something that people are familiar with and probably somewhere along the way know someone who has been touched by prostate cancer.
Right.
So again, it's the name of the program is On the Line, and Len is involved in it with and we mentioned the names earlier, Bobby Knight, Digger Phelps,
Billy
John Thompson,
Packer, right?
Billy Packer, Aaron Andrews, they're all involved in this. It's a, you know, ESPN's got a role in it. And again, the website is www.ontheline.com. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have about 15 minutes to talk a little football, a little baseball, and whatever else floats our fancy.
Folks, the Main Event Restaurant at Plainview offers the ultimate in dining, drinking, and sports viewing in a family-friendly atmosphere. The Main Event Experience features over 40 televisions showing games from all sports, complementing a broad selection of food and drinks, including choice steaks and some of the freshest seafood on Long Island. Plus, a wide variety of world-famous beer is available. The Main Event is located at 799 Old Country Road in Plainview, just west of the Seaford Oyster Bay Expressway. You can find them on the web at www.themaineventny.com. Do you like this song?
How can you not like this song?
Brown Sugar!
This is one of the classics. How can you not
like this? I do like this song. Rolling Stones song. Yes, I do.
We'll fade that
it
out.
Is a classic.
That's one. You know, and again, the song's tonight. And I don't know why you're so hung up on it being anti-Mardi Gras.
It's not anti.
It's one of the most festive days of the year. I've never been.
This is a sports talk show, not a festive atmosphere.
Oh, yo, sports is not a festive
atmosphere.
It's not a
festivus, okay? This is a sports talk show.
It's supposed to be festive.
And I don't
sports
want you to start
fun.
Crying like the Miami Heat, because I got to touch on that we move to baseball, football.
Go ahead.
What
go
was
ahead.
That all about? I mean, you follow the NBA. You work for the NBA. Why were they crying? They're at the top of the conference. What, 3-4 in the conference?
I think it's time to stop.
Is it because they're not going to get 70 wins?
It's time to stop questioning anything that LeBron James is involved with, because it's all a farce.
Doesn't the coach has to explain it?
No, and move
is
on.
Is he a good basketball coach?
I don't think anybody.
I never heard of the guy until he was coaching the Miami Heat.
I don't think anybody really knows whether he's a good basketball coach, simply because
who knows
how much control he has over this team, and who knows how much control any coach outside of Phil Jackson would have over
when
this
you bring
team.
Two megastars like Wade and LeBron together, I can't see why Pat Riley didn't just coach the
team. Of course.
I don't get
if
that.
If you weren't going to get Phil Jackson, then you bring in Pat Riley. But outside of that, you're always going to question whether the coach is the coach, simply because LeBron James went through this in Cleveland. How much say did Mike Brown have in anything there? Nobody really knows. And
Mike Brown struck me as more of a basketball coach than this guy, Spoelstra, whatever his name is. And this whole Miami tears, sweating tears and stuff. When I saw that on ESPN, I was just like, what is this? Who cares?
I don't even want to talk about it.
Who cares? Amari and Melo are putting the points together.
They are. You know, the problem with the Knicks is not now.
They're going to score.
No, that's not. The problem with the Knicks is not now. The problem with the Knicks is going to be in the playoffs.
Well, we'll see what
happens. Okay, because they don't have the depth. Three-man teams are great. And Billups has proven that, you know, as long as he's healthy,
he's a clutch
performer. The third guy. And they have the three guys. And that means you can compete on a night-in, night-out basis during the regular season and win the majority, maybe 60 of your games, maybe three-quarters of your games if you have three guys like that. The problem, though, is that when the playoffs roll around,
right,
things slow down a little bit, things get a little more physical. If you don't have the depth,
right,
and the other team does and has the same three guys that you do, I'm looking at Miami, and I'm looking at Boston, and I'm looking at Orlando, and I'm saying,
did they beat the Heat on the road?
In one game.
Yeah, well, if they keep crying those tears of sadness, they might wind up playing them in the first round.
That's one game.
I would like to see Wade and LeBron versus those two guys,
A seven-game series.
What are you so worried about? Who expected anything from the Knicks this year? I like the idea of watching those two guys go up against two other superstars.
But what they're doing is they're doing the typical New York thing. They're building up the fans' hopes.
Who cares?
Yeah, but you see, everybody has to be realistic right now. I'm not talking about next year. I'm talking about right now.
All right.
Okay? If you're the Knicks, you have these three guys. You're going to go and you're going to play one of those three teams, be it Orlando, be it Boston, be it Miami.
Or Chicago.
Well, no, Chicago does not have those three guys.
They have Rose.
Right.
Who's excellent.
The other three teams do.
Yes.
Okay?
Absolutely.
They also have a better bench. They have more depth. And when a team like the Knicks and a team like Boston meet up,
well, that would be
the edge goes to the team with
the
depth.
That would be dangerous.
The Knicks
Boston's
cannot,
gonna be number one. They're not going to play Boston.
I'm just talking big picture. The Knicks can't beat Boston in the playoffs.
Right.
They can't beat Miami.
I don't expect
them
to, though.
They can't beat Orlando in the playoffs.
No, because Dwight Howard's just a
they
monster.
Can't beat any of
they
those
could
three
beat
teams.
Chicago if they happen to
yeah,
get lucky and match up with
them. They could beat Chicago simply because the Knicks have more weapons than Chicago.
But Chicago's doing a great job,
but
though.
But now you have to look at the teams that the Knicks could play in the second round.
No, see, don't go that far ahead. Just worry about winning one round.
Yeah, but
it's the Knicks. Come on.
But it's been
an embarrassment for the last
Knicks
decade
fans
or so since they went to the finals.
Knicks fans aren't thinking about
but we don't have
round.
To think like other Knicks fans.
Knicks fans
I don't even like
thinking,
the Knicks.
They're not even thinking. Knicks fans are not thinking one round anymore. Now they're thinking two,
I want to see Bernard King come back and play.
If Herschel
Walker's going to come back, let Bernard King come back and suit up.
Herschel,
then you'll have your
Herschel Walker, you mean Tiki Barber.
No, him too. Oh, Herschel Walker, when he's done with the UFC stuff, he wants to play football again, too.
It's bad enough Tiki Barber's talking about coming back. Forget about Herschel Walker.
Let's save the NFL. Let's do baseball first, just for 4 minutes or so, and then we'll do NFL.
Well, we started talking about Tiki Barber. Let's just stick with it.
You want to talk about Tiki Barber? How about this?
I only need 30 seconds to talk about it.
Why does Tiki Barber want to play football again? Why?
I don't know.
Tell me why. Or how about this? This is why I have no respect for guys who have that small window of opportunity as a pro athlete, and they retire too young. I hate that. I don't respect it. You should never take that for granted as an athlete, and you should play as long as you can. And he retired. He missed out on the Super Bowl. What does he want to come back now for? Does he see this whole union stuff? They're going to get better retirement benefits? Is that why he wants to come back and suit up? Come on, stop. Well, because people got tired of listening to him on Fox with Friends or any other news outlet that he opened his mouth on, because now everybody knows he cheated on his wife and they don't care about him because he has no scruples. The hell with him. Who cares?
You know, maybe we should have talked
and he has no respect for Eli Manning? Oh, come on, stop.
I know you've got your baseball draft after this.
Eli Manning's probably laughing. Yeah, come back as a 35-year-old running back. What do you think he's giving?
He's
going to be like John Riggins?
You assume he's coming back with
Giants? He's going to be like Diesel with the Redskins? That's the only dominant running back I saw in his
30s. Why would the Giants bring him back? Why, you know, forget about it. He's going to end up going somewhere. If someone actually wants to sign him, he's going to end up going somewhere where he's going to be used as a name.
I don't hate Barry Sanders, but I didn't respect him for retiring at such a young age. Same thing goes for Jim Brown, all these other guys that get out when they should keep playing and dominating or enjoying the fact that they're a professional athlete and get paid ungodly amounts of money. Come on, stop.
There's also the guy.
He should have kept playing. He would have had a Super Bowl ring. Right?
But why hold it against a guy for retiring before he takes that hit that ends his career?
I don't know. Do you think he was motivated by seeing that Herschel Walker wants to come back and play?
I don't think one had anything to do with the other.
Okay.
All right. Well, but I'm looking at
35.
Barry Sanders or Jim Brown.
Barry Sanders got out. He was like 29, 30. Come on, man. He should have playing.
But why retire?
He was the dominant runner. He just played for 2,000 years, like 2,000 years, like a couple years earlier.
He had more money than he was going to know what to do with. He decided to get out before he could, while he could still walk.
That's great. Okay.
Look at all the guys.
So let's take the Earl Campbell approach then.
Look at all the guys.
Earl Campbell sold his body out.
Look at all the guys that have problems.
I have respect for Earl Campbell, and he can hardly walk.
Look at all the guys. A legend. Not just football players. Look at all the athletes that play until their body gives out.
Okay, so?
And pay
that's
the price.
That's their choice of profession. That's
and
fine.
That's why it's their choice to retire early, before their body gives out, and before they have to worry 10 years down the road that they can't get out of bed because their knees are
vulnerable. Obviously, he's not thinking like that because he wants to come back and play. He filed paperwork, right?
But why are you holding it against Barry Sanders?
If he wanted to stay healthy, why is he coming back
then? I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about a guy like Barry Sanders.
I'm not holding it against Barry. I just don't respect that approach as an athlete, okay?
But
I just don't
how can you not respect that?
Because I don't.
Because Barry Sanders today can get out of bed without having to worry about
his knees
being bone
on
bone.
Who knows what's going to happen with him? Because I have true admiration for a guy like Earl Campbell, who can hardly walk now. But he was a legend and a bull.
And you look at
and
all
hit
the
like
guys,
a fire hydrant.
And you look at all
and
the guys.
And I have no respect for Chad Pagan. The guy, fourth surgery, he's still... Still not decide where he's going to play.
Right, now look
come back.
Now look at all the
God
guys that die because that die early because of brain injury.
Oh, now we're going to go to CTE because people are trying to make this even bigger. Come on, Bob Probert had like 5,000 fights. Now all of a sudden, that's why
what
he
about,
got off.
What about all the offensive linemen?
Yeah, drug problem and everything
I'm
else going on.
About Bob Probert.
Well, he's one of the guys now though that donated his brain.
What about Dave Duerson?
Yeah, Dave Duerson had problems. He played in the NFL.
So you're saying that
it's a gladiator type sport.
All right, so
you
have saying,
violent collisions.
Right,
that's what
so
I'm here to see.
So you're saying that you don't respect Barry
training,
Sanders,
folks. We're finishing
you
with
don't respect Barry Sanders for retiring early because he didn't want
I
to
don't
end
respect,
up like Dave Duerson.
I don't respect the athlete that's on top of his game.
So you
and decides
he
to
should,
leave way too
so
early.
So you think
I don't,
he should play until he becomes.
I didn't say play till you're paralyzed, but he should have played until he was 33, 34, 35.
It's his decision.
Ah, come on.
It's his choice.
He made his decision.
Right.
I didn't stand in his way.
So, but who
I
are
just
you
don't
not,
care for it.
Who are you to not respect that
I just
decision?
Don't care for it. Because who I can have an opinion
let's
whether I care
Barry
for it or not.
Tom, call Barry Sanders.
Get him on the phone. I'll tell him.
Get Jim Brown on the phone.
You don't even have their phone number.
I want you to hear. I want you to say
Jim Brown the same thing. You're a lousy actor. You should
have
kept playing football.
All right, that's it.
Please.
Jim Brown's a long
guy. What, he was Joe Namath? He thought he was Joe Namath. He's going to get all the women in the world? Oh, stop.
Relax.
Jim Brown should have kept playing. He was a legend.
All right, relax.
Are you going to be able to get Barry Sanders? Because I'll talk to him if that's the case. Tom doesn't even know who Barry Sanders is. Come on.
All right, before we... I'm changing topics.
We're not... No. Now we got to talk about labor stuff. Because I want to ask
you... We don't talk labor
why not?
Stuff on the show. We don't talk labor stuff on the show because...
Well, they extended it 7 days.
Okay. All right, they extended
you don't
it
7 care.
Days. I don't care.
What do you want to see happen?
Play football. That's all. Just play football. I don't discuss labor stuff because none of us know what's going on in that room. These are all issues.
I want to see...
It's all arguments about
all I
want to
see.
It's all
I
want to
see guaranteed contracts for players. No, I know. Well, the PSLs are going up. I want to see guaranteed contracts for players, and I want to see better retirement benefits.
All right.
And on the other side, I want to see 18 games, and I want to see owners of teams make the money they're entitled to because they own the team. Otherwise, make the players pay for their own uniforms, make them pay for their own meals, make them pay for their workout facilities and everything else they get handed to them.
I would
because
rather,
I just don't. I can't. Process that.
I would
brain.
Rather talk about.
I must be an idiot.
I would rather talk about things
talk
that
about?
We can control.
We're talking about Beltran's tendonitis in his name?
I want to talk about things that we can control.
What do we control?
Check out our Facebook
page.
You
can't even page. Help Trevor Gillies get his $61,000.
Check out our Facebook page.
You have a Facebook page.
New York Sports Exchange. Check us out on the web at themerle.com.
The Merle.
Check me out on Twitter at themerle.
Why does it always be about you?
Because I'm the producer.
Because you're the man doing it all. Tweeting, Facebook,
I'm
everywhere.
I promote the show.
He's the Merle.
I book the guests. It's all about me
Tiki
right
Barber.
Now, baby. Who cares about Tiki Barber?
The dope.
Anyway, all right.
He's a dope.
So, New York Sports Exchange is our Facebook page. TheMerle.com. The Merle on Twitter. We have 2 minutes left.
We have 2 minutes left, man.
I'm still over.
What are you, a big Barry Sanders
rant.
Fan?
No, I just have no problem with a player retiring when he's ready to retire
early. I just don't necessarily
early.
Respect that decision making. That's just me personally. I'm not telling everybody. I'm not even saying that I'm right. I just personally don't. Because I played sports as long as I could. That's just the way I was, man.
I worked
I have CT. She played football and hockey and wrestling.
Yeah,
I worked
with enough former athletes, former pro athletes that had long careers.
All right.
That have trouble walking around.
Right.
Because their knees are bone on bone because of their playing career.
They got to be
not just
they got to play
players.
A kid's game. They were looked up to by thousands
right.
of kids.
And now in
the idols.
And then in their
they
early
were popular.
40s.
They were signing autographs. They had the life.
And then,
that,
and
listen,
by,
that's the that,
right.
that is
and
some
then,
people dream for a life like that.
Will you let me
athlete.
Finish my point?
No, go ahead though.
And then by their mid-40s, by the time they were about our age,
right.
they were they had trouble getting out of bed in
this
the morning.
Happens sometimes.
Why should a player play to the point where that becomes the case? Why don't they, if they want to retire early so that it doesn't
listen, if he gets hurt in his 20s like Gale Sayers or something, it could happen any time.
Out.
All right, so he got out. I don't necessarily care for that.
All right, the song is Lady Marmalade.
This is a good song.
LaBelle, as Tom reminded me before the show.
Maybe Carlos Beltran should get out because of his knee tendonitis. Maybe she should just retire, too. Because he might need a candy cane
me.
Stick to walk around with.
You're
oh, please
me.
Just stop.
You're
so soft. You're soft.
You're killing me. You're killing me. All right. We're going to wrap things up.
Good.
I think Tom is very happy that we're wrapping things up. We'll be back right here next week. Another episode. New York Sports Exchange for Derek Wasiak.
Let's go Rangers, baby.
I'm Eric Merlis. We'll see you back here Tuesday night.